Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, and we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And as always, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry!
Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How was your week?
Yay! That's good. Not too bad here. I'm just resting and, you know, just after a full day, a show and everything, it's kind of like, yeah, it's good to be able to relax and just kind of regroup. So, yeah, just good food and good company and just relaxing today. I'm excited to talk about this because our first time guest is J.J. Crane. He's an author, and also he's going to talk about something I don't think we ever covered, at least since I've been on the show. It's going to be, next month will be 2 years. I can't believe it's gone by so fast. But we're going to talk about the Jersey Devil.
I think this is episode 168 for Paranormal
Horizons. Oh, my gosh.
I remember.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. It's been fun. I don't know that I've ever talked about the Jersey Devil. And, you know, it's a subject I don't know a lot about. So I'm looking forward to learning a little bit about it. And let's just go ahead and we'll bring him on right now. We'll bring on J.J. Crane.
Thank you. Yes, we'll bring him on.
J.J., how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys all doing out there?
Very good. You're out in the East Coast. Have you heard of the latest in the hurricane back down in the south?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's quite a bit of ways, but, yeah, we've been watching it and whatnot. I mean, I have some friends down there, and I know lots of people have the powers out, but for the most part, as far as I know, the friends that I have down there are safe. So that's a good thing, just no
that's
power.
That's a good thing. Very good. My cousin who lives down there, she's saying something about putting the shutters up.
Yeah, my wife's boss had to fly down because that's where his family is, and they put up all these types of storm shutters and everything like that just to keep it safe so, you know, you have some place to go to. A lot of people have evacuated. I know a buddy of mine's sister evacuated out. She's up here in New Jersey now. I know other friends of ours, kids who are going to college down there, have all evacuated and have come back home until things settle down. I mean, who knows how long people are going to be out of power. When we had Superstorm Sandy come through here a number of years ago, we lost power here for 10 days.
Wow.
It happened on October 30th, and 10 days later, we got our power back.
Jeez.
That's a long
time
to go without power.
Yeah, well, thankfully we had a generator and we were able to share power with other people, and people were chipping in to make gas runs because, you know, when you went to a gas station in this area, you had to wait online for a mile or two to possibly get some gas. You get your gas, come back. You know, it was rough, but, you know what? Late fall at that time, you know, the weather can be iffy. It can go real cold or it can stay mild. Thankfully, it stayed more to the mild side. We only had one or two really chilly nights where, you know, you had to get we have a wood-burning stove, and we had that thing going to keep us on the warm side. But it was a throwback, you know. You all of a sudden, it's like, you know, you don't have any, there's no power, there's no computer, there's no TV, there's nothing. I remember one of the things we did was we hooked up a coffee pot to the generator and blew a fuse because you didn't realize how many starting amps that thing had. Blew a fuse, and all of a sudden the generator stops working. Like, oh, okay, you have to unplug a few things to make coffee.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, you have to be mindful.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about tonight about the Jersey Devil. And just quickly, why don't you just introduce yourself, and then we can find out what is the Jersey Devil, and learn more about it.
Well, as you introduced me before, my name is J.J. Crane. I'm an author and a teacher and a photographer, and I do a lot of public speaking as well. But the Jersey Devil is a myth that's been going on in this area since the mid-1700s. The legend actually goes back to about 1735, where a Mrs. Leeds you know, the stories will vary whether she was raped or whether she just got tired of having children. But supposedly around the 13th child, she cursed it, and this thing turned into a devil. And some people will tell you that it was a deformed baby that she cursed on right there on the site when it came out, and that it grew wings and then flew off into the woods. Some legends will have you that it killed everyone in the room, and others that it just flew off into the stormy night and has haunted the New Jersey Pine Barrens ever since. So
record accounts of people who have confronted or seen something like this?
Well, actually, through the years, there have been a number of sightings. And, you know, you still get some modern-day sightings, people who were camping in the woods and heard strange things or saw strange stuff. But the most compelling time that the Jersey Devil made an appearance was in 1909. There was a week in January. It started on the 16th and went through the 23rd of January, where all kinds of people in South Jersey and a little bit in Pennsylvania say they saw the Jersey Devil. There were policemen, priests, politicians, all claiming that the Jersey Devil was terrorizing their towns on different parts of the day or night. And they had hunting expeditions that were going out, and people were saying they fired shots at this thing. And a fire company said that they unloaded a hose on the Jersey Devil when it started to attack them. So there's all these accounts. And if you go back and if you can access those newspapers at the time, you will see that there were all kinds of write-ups. There was a lot of panic in the streets in South Jersey in that week in 1909.
Oh.
So it's the most prominent one. I mean, people will tell you that there are strange killings in farms, like something killed chickens, something, you know, killed a goat, something, you know, just some odd things here and there. So that kind of stuff's been going on for years and years and years. When I've done some research on this, I found out that Joseph Bonaparte, he was the former king of Spain and the brother of Napoleon, saw the Jersey Devil when he was visiting the United States in Bordentown, New Jersey, while he was on a hunting expedition. Now, the dates are a little fuzzy on that, so it was sometime in the 1830s. So, you know, but hey, those are legends. So those are the things that they say have happened. So it's just fascinating that there are I'm sorry?
I was going to say, I've always been skeptical about the whole cryptozoology thing and Bigfoot. I just always wonder if people aren't, like, you know, it's dark outside and people aren't misidentifying things or people's imagination. But that's just me. But, I mean, you never know. I suppose something could exist out there.
You know what? I think the Jersey Devil is more of a legend thing. I don't believe in it per se. I'm much more of an optimistic skeptic when it comes to, say, a Bigfoot. But for the Jersey Devil, I mean, to us, when I was growing up, and believe it or not, one of the first times that I heard about Jersey Devil stories was when my parents sent me off to church camp when I was in middle school, and the camp counselors would scare us with Jersey Devil stories. And so I just always thought of it as more of a good ghost story, you know, just something to kind of freak you out. But I'll tell you what, I've done a lot of photography and hiking in the Pine Barrens, and when you grow up here, and that's kind of in the back of your head. And, you know, it gets to dusk and those woods start to get really dark. Some of those things, they just sort of peck at your brain a little bit, and you pick up the pace a little quicker to get back to your car, you know. So to some degree, yes, I think some people have vivid imaginations.
Well, it does make you wonder if it goes back hundreds of years, you know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody has seen something unusual out there, but I do find it fascinating.
It does start to go back to, it goes back to this family, the Leeds. That's where it definitely goes back to that, and there is a Leeds family that still lives in that region of the state, which is just north of Atlantic City. So if you look at a map and just look at Atlantic City, there's Leeds Point, Smithville. That's where the legend comes from. And I actually did this past spring, I did I was part of one of these art walks, and I was selling my books and stuff, and I've met people that claimed to be of that lineage, of the Leeds lineage. And lots of people are willing to share their stories. You know, there were some people that shared, they seemed genuine, and they were sharing their stories of the strange things that they saw flying through their backyard or on a farm, and they would have said my dog was killed by the Jersey Devil because nothing else could do that, what was done. And it's like, okay, I mean, what do I know? I mean, people are going to believe what they're going to. I'm not going to sit there and go, no, you're wrong. But, listen, when I was just out in Oregon for the Bigfoot Festival, there was lots of people sharing what really came off as genuine, heartfelt experiences. And, you know, a couple of them, you're like, wow, it just sounds like, you can almost tell when people are talking about it that this is what they believe. They're not BSing you. They're sharing an experience that they believe was true. And who am I to know? You know, who am I to say? So why not? You know, but as far as the Jersey Devil goes, I do tend to believe it's more of a myth that's just had legs. It's just kept going on for years and years and years. But the early 20th century, that 1909 time, there was a whole bunch. And then periodically some people will call up with we'll call the police or say something that that a farm animal was killed by the Jersey Devil or something like that. I mean, if you looked it up, you could see a variety of incidences in 61, 87, 69. They pop up here and there. You know, a guy whose car breaks down on a back road. And if you're ever in one of these back roads in the Pine Barrens, it's a very creepy area. No elevation like you guys have out west, but it's all these very spindly pine trees that just sort of, they all look like they're like evil figures. And in the dark or in the fading light of day, they can all look very menacing. And it's a very sandy, acidic environment. The water there is very tan and dark, and it has like a sort of smell to it. And it's just a different type of place. I mean, most people think of New Jersey as highways, factories, and it's overcrowded, and it has all that stuff. But there's a section of the state that's it's still very preserved, and you can go for miles in just these little sand roads that wind off into the Pine Barrens. It's a type of woods.
Now, I don't know if I'm remembering this from a movie or not, but is there a thing where when the Jersey Devil is kind of a warning that something terrible is going to happen, like a disaster? I can't remember if that was in a movie or if that was thing or not.
You know, I've heard that with other things. So wasn't Mothman supposedly that way too?
Oh.
When the Mothman showed up that was something like that. I haven't heard that with the Jersey Devil, but I'm sure it's somewhere people will have that as well.
I think I'm thinking of the Mothman. I'm getting my creatures mixed up.
Yeah, I think that one was the Mothman.
Yeah, that's the Mothman. Okay.
And the creature and the Jersey Devil creature, it has all kinds of descriptions. Some people say it's like 3 feet tall, 3.5 feet tall, but it has like the head of a dog and it has wings. And other people have depicted it as a much larger thing. Now, in my book, I decided to go with the much larger, much more evil Jersey Devil that was, killing people and things throughout that region of New Jersey. And so I opted to take it to the more extreme. So, but some people tell you it's kind of small, but it's terrifying, and it's like, yeah, but small and terrifying. But, you know, people kind of think.
I would, this is me, and this is how I feel. And Jason probably is probably the opposite, but I wouldn't be surprised if we would have that kind of cryptoid, because. You know, we as a species, we are so limited in what we experience and see. That's why this area is so fascinating when you look at all the different things from Mothman to werewolf and things like that. It's just, you know, how many people, I feel that, I don't know. I just feel like they do exist. I really do. It's just
we just have not had
that experience. And, you know, once you have that experience, whether it's a UFO or being an abductee or something like that, then you really change your mind about things. But, like I said, to me, I wouldn't be surprised if that really does exist.
Well, you, even just through just the last 50 years, the number of animals or creatures from the sea that we thought were extinct, all of a sudden we found some. Or some washed up on a shore, and it's like, oh my God, we thought that thing was extinct for 50 million years, and there it was that's still alive, and so why not? I mean, I tend to be skeptical, but mm-hmm. not in a negative fashion. I'm always open to it. Why not?
Yes,
why not?
Exactly.
I believe you have to be open to it. Like I said, I've been down in the Pine Barrens, hiking, camping, photographing, all those things, and I've never had any experience. I've talked to some old timers that said they did. Now, okay, I mean, again,
yeah.
Who am I to say that your experience isn't valid? But regardless of all that, the Jersey Devil itself has lived on long enough that we've had it was the subject of an X-Files episode in its first season, and I know of two not major movies, but two movies were made that dealt around the Jersey Devil. The one was called The Barrens in 2012 with Stephen Moyer. He was in True Blood, and The 13th Child in 2002 with Cliff Robertson. So,
wow. And it says here, I'm looking at this, is that the Animal Planet had an article or a show called The Jersey Devil. It's called Lost Tapes, and they were talking about the legend of the Jersey Devil. So even
yeah.
Animal Planet was, describing, what that is, and it's a growling creature with hoofed feet.
Yes, yes, and that's what they'll say, that it has hoofed feet. And
oh my gosh! And he looks like a devil. I mean, I can understand.
Yeah.
Wow, it's crazy. But when you look at that, it looks like a devil that has got wings. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's got wings like a bat, but
yep.
it has hooked feet, and his arms are really snarly and clawy. And
yes.
the face has got horns. Jason, this is really good. This is kind of like a quite interesting, but yeah, very. Oh wow, this is crazy.
You'll see a variety of interpretations of it out there. And hey, what it is, where that truth is, I don't know at this moment. Like I said, I've never experienced it all down there. Creepy noises and freaking myself out a couple times in the woods, sure, but never anything like that, But like I said,
reported over 2,000 witnesses have reported sightings.
Yeah.
Of the Jersey Devil over the past 275 years.
Yes. Oh, like I said, when I was doing this art walk show down in Smithville, which they claim to be the home of the Jersey Devil, I've talked to people who were witnesses to it. And like I said, I've met people that were of the lineage, of the Leeds lineage down there. And I've actually driven in the area because the house that that Mother Leeds supposedly gave birth to this child in existed at one time, but I guess sometime in the mid-20th century, it got razed to the ground, and just the foundation. I've talked to people who have visited the foundation, that the foundation is still there. It's actually on private property. A lot of people, they really don't want anyone going looking for it. You know, if you happen
wow.
to get if you happen to get on the inn with some people, they would be happy to show it to you. Some guy who claimed that he's been there a couple times told me the road to go down, and I'd actually driven down the road that he had described. Because for one, if you look at a map of the area, there's not a whole lot of roads. And I just remember driving down there when he was describing some of the sites. I recall because I was photographing so much of it. That I was like, yeah, I remember that. He goes, well, you got to take one of those little cutouts in the woods. You get off the paved road, and now you're not even on a dirt road. You're more on one of those, driveways into the woods that hasn't been kept up in years. And
I was like,
you know what? I'll skip doing any of that. Yeah.
Our listeners, if they want to see kind of a good depiction of what it looks like and the description, go under animalplanet.com and just type in under monsters, Jersey Devil. It has a really good picture of
yeah.
what it could possibly look like. They say that it says it claims of it. It has a head of a dog with the face of a horse.
Yeah.
A deer-like antlers, a kangaroo's body, a large leathery wing, a forked reptile tail, and cloven hooves and long razor-like claws. Can you imagine that?
It would be pretty wild. Now, there's people who have claimed to have taken pictures of that. In the 1909 sightings, being wintertime in South Jersey, there was plenty of snow on the ground in that particular winter, and there was people claiming that it was all over their farms, or up and down streets, and they found them. And people claim to have them. I'm sure someone on the internet has printed them, published them, but I've never seen it, but who knows?
Exactly.
You can find strange things.
Well, I it's a subject, like I said, I don't know a lot about, but I am looking at it online, and it looks like the year 1909 was a year of hoaxes. There was a guy that basically planted fake footprints and claimed to be the Jersey Devil hoofprints.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's some other guy, this is even better, in 1909 also. A guy took a kangaroo, glued some bat wings on it, and attached some claws, and claimed he captured the Jersey Devil. That's hilarious.
Oh yeah. But those people were I guess they were taking advantage of the hysteria of the time. So somewhere along the line, there's like that ground zero where all of a sudden some people started to see it, and then there's always going to be someone that's going to try to capitalize on that hysteria, for good or bad, one way or the other. There's always someone out there trying to do that. So this hoax is, there's Bigfoot hoaxes all the time too, which I think stuff like that just muddies up, the people who are genuine in trying to really do good work to see, does this thing truly exist. And when you have people throwing hoaxes out there like that, and it's a shame because, there's some people that have a good belief system in it, and they believe what they're going after. Especially if we're going to talk about Bigfoot, definitely something like that. The Jersey Devil, like I said, with that's been more of a myth. Most people here take it as a myth than a real thing. I'm sure there are some people that definitely are dyed-in-the-wool believers. I have no doubt about it. So,
well, years ago, I interviewed a guy that claimed that he had shot Bigfoot and had the body, and of course that was a hoax. And I think, as amusing as hoaxes are, it really does a disservice. And because that's what we see a lot of nowadays, with UFO pictures and everything online and Photoshop. It's impossible to determine what's legit or not. It's so frustrating. It really kind of muddies the paranormal evidence out there because you just don't know.
I'm one of these people that believes that the potential that we all have our individuals as a human race and whatnot is we haven't even tapped into it, that the human brain hasn't even tapped into what we could do. But we do muddy things up with disinformation and hoaxes and stuff like that, so it makes it hard to make good progress on that kind of stuff. You look at like the Ancient Alien guys on the History Channel. I'm always fascinated by that, fascinated by things like that. But other people will just tell you, no, they're wrong. But, I've seen science be wrong plenty of times, the dating of things. We'll go centuries believing something is a certain date, and then they're like, well, further evidence shows it was either a later date or an earlier date. And with biblical archaeology and things like that, we've moved the timeline on things with that. Like, for centuries we thought it was, David was X date, and now we're like, maybe it was just a little bit earlier than what they're saying. Things like that. So science hasn't always been 1,000%, but, that's always growing, correcting yourself and moving forward, but accepting growing, I'll give you another example, the Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory was laughed at when it first came out. And some scientists used to say the Big Bang Theory will take over as the theory when all the haters die off. They all started to pass away, and then, the Big Bang Theory was like, this is the best theory we have to explain the universe. So things change.
Ancient Aliens cracks me up. You know, they always say the same thing. Is it possible that, a 1,000-foot aliens on the moon are hurling rocks or something completely outrageous? And it makes me laugh every time. It's like some of their theories are just awesome.
No, I think at times it is, too. I will tell you that I like watching the show, and I found the first couple seasons of the show very well done. And then after that, it seems like they were just scraping for ideas. And so I would watch a show, and it's like, my God, they make one good point, and then they've got 50 minutes to go to just scrape up other ideas, because some of it is on the outrageous side. But I always find it to be interesting. Whether there's any validity to it is another thing, but I do find that some of the sameness in some of these ancient cultures is fascinating. Why do certain cultures just all pop up and they parallel each other very closely? Or how can people make structures and have no clue of math? You know, it's like, all right, well, how'd you make all that? Mm-hmm. You can't guess it. It's too complicated to guess it. And then they supposedly had no knowledge of math. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff fascinates me. A lot of those subjects all fascinate me. And why not? I think there's a lot to be fascinated by in the world.
I mean, there's all sorts of cave paintings and all sorts mm-hmm. of carvings that look like what we consider to be modern day aliens, grays, whatever you want to call them. And it's intriguing for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
yes.
Oh, I was going to ask, now with the Jersey Devil, is there any physical evidence other than footprints in the snow? I mean, has there been any really substantial evidence that's hard to refute? I imagine not. I imagine it's a lot.
No, I don't think there's anything like that. Outside of what people claiming their animals to have been, gutted and disemboweled and ripped to shreds, and a fox doesn't do this, a coyote doesn't do this. You know what I mean? It's like the way that mutilation happened doesn't necessarily add up with the behavior of, the animals that are in that particular region. So, similar to when people were saying that all those cows were mutilated in the fields by UFOs. You know, it doesn't match up. What does that? So you have stories like that with the Jersey Devil here in the state. So aside from people talking about their own, personal experiences and supposed pictures of footprints, no, none that I know, not that I'm aware of. And I've never seen a show on any one of these episodes, on any of these monster shows or anything like that, that says they do.
Are there any military bases close to where these sightings are? Because I think you can never discount the possibility that it's some sort of military experiment that's gone wrong, some sort of genetic engineering. Because our government has to have some underground base somewhere, messing with Mother Nature and cloning and all sorts of weird, crazy stuff we don't know about. You never know.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's two major there's an Air Force, McGuire Air Force Base. That's where the Hindenburg blew up. That's in the Pine Barrens. And Fort Dix. Fort Dix was for years, it was one of the big epicenters of where people would, when you joined the Army, you went for basic training. They don't really use it for basic training. It's still an active base, but they don't use it for basic training anymore. I mean, you can actually, when I go down to this area called White's Bog, and I like to do photography there and walk around, and it's right in the middle of the Pine Barrens, you can actually hear the guys training. You hear machine gun fire not too far away. So you hear it, and then you can see planes taking off, C-5As and other transport planes running drills. And so they're up and around. So, yeah, there still is a significant military presence in central Jersey in the Pine Barrens.
The other thing I got to wonder about on the same line is, some sort of psychological operations. Our government could be conducting psychological experiments on a populace to see how they react or how information spreads and changes and... Who knows?
I don't doubt that stuff like that happens. I don't doubt any stuff like that happens at all. Now, the thing is I've never heard anything like that associated with those two places. You heard it with some other places, but I've never heard it with Fort Dix or McGuire. Not in any, I mean, and I grew up here in New Jersey, and I grew up on the Jersey Shore. You know, I was a stone's throw away from the Pine Barrens. It was essentially in my backyard. And, but we never heard anything like that. We heard Jersey Devil stories, campfire stories, scary stories, stuff like that, you know, killing the farm animals, chasing people out of their campsites and stuff like that. But I've never heard of any kind of mind control stuff. To say that it's not there, well, you can't really deny it, because that's just a good covert operation then, isn't it?
Exactly.
I don't know anything about that. I've never heard any kind of tales come out from that, or any rumors or innuendo going that way. I just know that they do a lot of training down there. That's a lot going on. And like I said, then the Hindenburg exploded when it came in, and it pulled in the McGuire and caught fire, and that was there. But it, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no,
I didn't
no,
want to
you're
step.
Saying...
It's an interesting, like I said, it's an interesting landscape down there. The wildlife's a little different. You get these pine barren tree frogs with freaky sounds when they do their calls. No bear, but some people will claim there's bear, and sometimes you hear the cougar story that they're down there, but I've never seen any of them. There have been some people, because you can kind of get lost out there. There have been some people who have owned exotic animals, and a number of years ago, someone's tiger got loose, and they had to hunt a tiger down out there. So it's pretty wild. It's a different area down there.
I've been to New Jersey a couple times. I used to be a private investigator, and they sent me to New York a couple times, and
okay.
Very, very interesting place, you know, so I would have to basically do surveillance in the Bronx, and I think all I did in New Jersey when I drove over there was, from what I recall, was several years ago, I had to go to get some paperwork for some courthouse or something, but it's kind of a nice area out there, at least comparatively to the boroughs.
New York, New Jersey's North Jersey is very developed, but as you go west and south, it starts to get a little more sparse. The populations in these areas are just crammed into one area. I'm up in the New Brunswick area by Rutgers University, and there's a lot of folks here. The Pine Barrens area, if you were to look at a map of New Jersey, a loose borderline would be Interstate 195. That would be the north end of the Pine Barrens, and you can go all the way to the south. You can to about the Atlantic City Expressway. It certainly extends beyond that, but the bulk of the Pine Barrens happens between the Atlantic City Expressway and Interstate 195. And that area is, and you could see if you look at a map, there's the Brendan T. Byrne State Forest, there's Wharton State Forest, Penn State Forest, there's a lot of Forked River, there's a lot of places that you can go to get a taste of what the Pine Barrens is all about. And it can be very thick, scrubby area, so if you go off trail and bushwhack, you're going to have a tough time of it in areas, because it's just a wall of like I said, scrub and sticker bushes and stuff like that, and it can be just an absolute nightmare of ticks in some of that area too. I mean, you go down there, you want to be prepared, otherwise you're going to be crawling out with ticks all over yourself. it's not pleasant.
Lyme disease.
Well, we got a lot of that here.
Oh, do you? That's unfortunate.
Yeah, New Jersey's one of like those top 10 states with Lyme disease. A lot of the Northeast is. But a lot of it has to do with the development, and, you know, you don't do anything about the deer population, and when deer are close to each other, they just make more deer. You know, there's more deer in New Jersey now than there was at the Revolutionary War, when all those people were settling into this whole area and first developing that pre-Revolutionary War time. There's more deer now than there ever was back then. Because they had more places to roam and go and spread out. Here they're on top of each other. They're everywhere.
I work in a medical laboratory, and occasionally we get tests for Lyme disease, but I don't see it very often. It's probably nothing like New Jersey. I don't think we have a lot of ticks in the western part of the state, but I know I've seen ticks like in eastern Oregon.
Yeah, they're here. I know people that have it. You know, I mean, I'll probably get a tick on me. I'm very diligent about it, and I make sure I take those things off as fast as I can, because again, it's Lyme disease, and I don't need to be dealing with that. Because some people don't get affected by it a lot, and other people get really hammered with it, and it affects everyone different. But I'm not going to go chasing the Jersey Devil into the deep parts of the Pine Barrens and get all those ticks for it. But other than this, people that go down there, and like I was saying before, they have these weird experiences. They go hunting back in there, and if you go down into those woods, it's, you know, it's tough to walk in because it's more of like a hard packed sand environment. It's very thick, and like I said, if you get off of the path, it's tough, and you can get disoriented very fast, very fast. Because there's not a whole lot of markers. There's a sameness to the Pine Barrens that's very hypnotic. Everywhere you look, it looks exactly the same. And there's no elevation change, or there's very little elevation change. And you can just keep walking, or you can walk in a circle and not know. Or you just walk 10 miles in a direction, maybe not quite that far. But you can walk a substantial amount of time and just not have any idea where you are. And so it can be very disorienting in there. It's an interesting. Yes, you were gonna ask
how big is it? Like how many acres? Like are we talking like 5,000 acres or bigger?
Oh, I would say it's bigger than that. I don't have that information at my fingertips, like the acreage of the Pine Barrens. But it's like I said, if you looked at a map and you went and saw Interstate 195, and then you looked in that whole area going down to the Atlantic City Expressway. That whole area in the middle of the state there, that's a lot of Pine Barrens, and it's not a lot of population. There's not a lot of big towns. I mean, the closer to the highways there are, like the Parkway and the Turnpike, which are on the west and east coast of that block that I'm giving you. But it's very sparse. There's a lot of farmland there. I mean, New Jersey's nickname is the Garden State, and we're known for our tomatoes and corn but there's a lot of woods in there that's not developed. And a lot of it's protected, too. A lot of it's been protected for years and years and years. Our wonderful governor, Governor Christie, who's on his way out, he's been trying to manipulate it so they can build certain pipelines through the state. And there's a lot of anti that because we have some endangered species down there and stuff, and no one's really in favor of running any kind of gas pipelines through the Pine Barrens. So hopefully they can preserve it. I mean, because personally, we have enough here. We have enough development in the state. We don't need any more. That's my own personal, you know, stance on that. You know, I like to save some of the environment to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, why destroy the environment? We do enough of that already. Have you been to New Jersey, Sherry?
No, I haven't. The closest place I've been back east there is Florida to visit my cousins.
Mm.
So
okay.
I don't even know what it's like to be in New Jersey, let alone in Chicago or New York.
Well, Chicago's beautiful. Been there. New York's nice. I mean, listen, I go to New York, you know, it's 30 minutes from my house if I don't hit any traffic.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, I'm going tomorrow, going over to Jersey City for the tribute lights get lit tomorrow for 9/11. And I'm sure you guys have seen the tribute lights that you know, pictures of it from New York City. They represent the Twin Towers, and I'll be on the Jersey side. I'll photograph it, and then you know it's a big gathering. A lot of people come out for it. We're going to go over to where where you would pick up the ferry for the Statue of Liberty. There's also a memorial there called the Empty Sky Memorial, that was erected for all of the people who passed away on 9/11 that lived in New Jersey, that were New Jersey residents.
I wanted to ask you, JJ, that you wrote a book about the Jersey Devil. What inspired you to write a book about it?
You know what? Years ago, I wrote a short story about it. I'd heard all those stories, and so I wrote this short story about the Jersey Devil killing people in the 1800s in the backwoods, and just these little short horror stories. And so, for years, I've always wanted to write a book. But, you know, sometimes life gets in the way, or just didn't have the discipline to do it at the time. And then when I finally sat down to write it, I wanted to try to incorporate some of those ideas that I had, whether it would be a prologue or put them into the book, but it never happened. The story started to form in its own way. A detective is now faced with all these very strange and bizarre killings. There's no clues of any kind that make any sense. And so I started to develop that angle of it. And then that's when this paranormal journalist comes along and tells the detective, whose name is Hunter, tells the detective that, you know what, I think this is the Jersey Devil. Some of these killings actually resemble some of the killings from folklore and that people have been reporting for years and years and years. And the guy, of course, the detective doesn't believe it. Hunter doesn't believe it. But the female character in the book, Casey, keeps pressing him. No, it's this. And then they finally have an encounter with the Jersey Devil in the Pine Barrens while they're chasing down the only suspect that he thinks could be behind these killings. And then now the two of them realize that the Jersey Devil exists. And, of course, no one else is going to believe them, and they have to figure out what are they going to do with this thing? Where's it come from? How are we going to kill it, or how do we get rid of it? What do we do? So that becomes the crux of the book. But I had these stories years ago, and it was just something that always felt within that I had to write that book. Didn't know exactly what it was way back when, but when it finally came through, I'm pretty happy with it.
Wow.
You know, it's nice to write. I hear people talk about it all the time. They want to write a book. But it takes a ton of discipline, and, you know, I put myself to it. It took a couple of years. The first book took forever. But, you know, I finally got it, and I'm very happy with it.
Is it easier once you start writing a book? It's easier to write another book after the first time?
Yes, I have found that to be much easier because the first draft to my Bigfoot book, Just Beyond the Shadows, took about 4 months.
Wow.
Sat down, set some weekly goals that I wanted to meet, and then just pounded out a first draft. And generally what I do is when I write a first draft of something, I then put it away for about 6 weeks, pull it back out, and then just start to edit. What do I have to add? What do I have to take away? How terrible is my grammar? And just where's the run-on sentences? Because I don't worry about a lot of that stuff when I'm initially writing. I just pound away, and you just want to get the ideas out. And then second and third draft, you start massaging the book into a better place. And then I'll give it to some friends and beta readers, and they'll give me notes, and you go back. So it takes a little time, because I have jobs and other life. I would love to be successful enough to be able to sit and do this all the time and just, let some money come in and I can do that. You know what I mean? It would be nice. But it takes a lot of discipline. I have another book that I'm finishing up called Outpost 9. It's about survivors of a flu epidemic where a flu virus goes wacky and knocks out about two-thirds of the Earth's population. And this is a group of survivors who are trying to get on with things. And that one I'm hopefully going to have done just in time for flu season. So I've been working on that one for a while. Plus I have other first drafts of some thrillers and stuff. It's just a matter of just getting to them, and you just keep at them. I'm trying to always write. I don't go very long without doing some form of writing.
That's good.
Yes.
Oh, I've always wanted to write a book, but like you said, it's discipline. Like with anything else in my life, I just don't have discipline. I get bored or distracted or something else comes up. So I commend you for following through with that.
It was just, and part of it is that I've always written. I wrote a lot in college for the various magazines and newspapers that they had. And then when I got out of college, I got into television for a while. And I was writing for a little entertainment show right outside of Philly, and then moved up to North Jersey, and I started writing commercials, like local business commercials, and then I got promoted to work for this startup network where I was just doing all kinds of promotions for news and TV shows, and then I gravitated over to working for Ricky Lake, where I was doing some promotions for her, where we would just watch Ricky Lake episodes all day long and then write 30-second spot, 20-second spot, 10-second spots, 15-second spots to basically grab your attention and watch Ricky Lake. And then I was working there, and I was also doing some work with MSNBC as well. You know, I was doing law and MSNBC when we would do a lot of their – I'm sorry. When I was working with MSNBC, it was in the time before they went 24/7 with their cable news. It was pre-9/11. And so they would have lots of entertainment spotlights, special investigation shows, and I would write a lot of promotions for those. And then every once in a while, I would have to write promotions for Law and Order, which was really cool. And that was like one of those really cool highlights when you see your spot that you wrote on, you know, national television, Channel 4. I believe it was Channel 4. Yeah, it was a Channel 4 show. Channel 4 is NBC here in New York. And you see your spot aired. It's like, it's kind of like being at the mountaintop for that little bit of time, you know?
That would be amazing.
Wow.
So that was fun. So I was always writing. I mean, it was all very short form, nothing long. I mean, some behind-the-scenes stuff for sales departments and stuff like that, but nothing like fiction or a novel. So just sitting down to do that. And I just went and did it. I didn't take any classes, and I didn't take any online courses or buy any books or anything like that, because I've read enough over the years and just watch how story structure works, and I just started to put it together. Is The Jersey Devil a perfect book? Far from it. But you know what? I think it's an entertaining book, and if people want to seek it out and go on Amazon and purchase an e-book or a soft cover, oh, God bless. Thank you. But I think it's an entertaining book, and I think people will find it as well. Same with the Bigfoot book.
Did you go out to the Pine Barrens with a notepad and like write down your impressions and stuff like that?
I like to keep a notepad in the car with me, so I have jotted notes down. You know, and not so much for any kind of scenes, but more how do you want to tell or show certain feelings, like when the hairs on your neck go up. You know, you want to freak yourself out a little bit out there, and then you want to write it down. How did you feel? And this way you can then convey that back into the story, or you hope that you convey it well in the story. So I've done that. And for the Bigfoot book, Just Beyond the Shadows, I went on a BFRO expedition in Pennsylvania just to see what it was all about. And it was an interesting group. I thought I was really fascinated by the people that I met. Met doctors and pilots and mechanics and welders, post office people. You met all walks of life. So that was rather fascinating when I did that. But you want to kind of get a feel for it. So.
Did you find any evidence of Bigfoot when you went on the expedition?
No. You know what? We went. I was in Allegheny State Park. And that's where the Jacob sighting took place. If any of the people listening, if you look up the Jacob sighting, these brothers were setting up trail cams in the woods, and they have two photographs of what looks to be what they call a baby Bigfoot in the woods that go by this trail cam. And some people go, oh, it's an emaciated bear. Oh, I'll tell you, I've seen these pictures. And it doesn't look like an emaciated bear. Just the whole figure to it doesn't. I don't know what it is, but it's odd. And so as part of that expedition, we met one of the brothers. They brought us out to where this all took place, and people were making measurements, and I photographed it. And it was rather fascinating. I'll tell you what, one of the fascinating things I found about the Bigfoot community is that there's people there that will share video that the public has never seen. And the reason they do it, they'll keep it within the confines of the group, because they can trust the group. And they ask that no one tape this or anything like that. And you know, and you just honor the request. And you saw some stuff that I've never seen it on television. And the reason that people won't do it is because they don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want people to tell them, no, that's not what you saw. You're an idiot, or you're a fool, or people might even get fired for saying that they believed in Bigfoot. You know what I mean? They don't want to get ostracized for it, so they keep it within themselves. And I found that was one of the things that I learned. And so you heard a recording, saw footage of stuff that people haven't seen that I found rather compelling. Was it a slam dunk of evidence? No. but it was compelling footage. I'll say that much.
Wow.
I think the same holds true for, like, UFO sightings and alien abductions. A lot of people don't really want to talk about it.
I think so, too. And, you know, I would imagine it's a tough thing. I can't. It's got to be a tough thing for people, you know, to deal with it. If you have, like, a UFO experience or an alien where you believed you were abducted by an alien, I mean, it's a lot to try to balance within yourself, let alone then come out publicly with it. So, I mean, I don't blame people for it. I hope they deal with it in their own way, so in a positive way.
I wish the truth would just come out with everything. Bigfoot, aliens, you know, that would just be great.
Well, it would be, but then it would take the mystery out of everything. And I think some
That's
of it is
true.
Is the it's the chase. I think, you know, we love the chase. We do. We love the chase and the mystery of it and whatnot. Will we ever find? I think of all these things, if one of them exists, I think Bigfoot probably has the best chance. And I do believe I am a believer that there's got to be something more than just us on this great big universe. So what to what degree UFOs exist and that stuff are, I'm not sure, but I do tend to believe in that. I've never had any experience with it myself. But I tend to buy into that. So maybe one of these days we'll find out.
I've had quite a few UFO experiences, and like Sherry mentioned quite a bit earlier, it is kind of one of those things where you have to experience it to believe it, you know. If I was out in the Pine Barrens and I saw some creepy thing out, you know, I might be more inclined to believe it. Bigfoot, I've always been super skeptical of because I've always thought that, you know, if there was a Bigfoot, eventually somebody would, you know, find a legitimate body. And I've talked to, like, all the big people in the Bigfoot community, like Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum.
Yeah.
And some of them had some good points as to why we don't find bodies. Like, for example, they could possibly bury their bodies. But even still, I just think there would be more legitimate evidence after all this time and after all the people that have all these outdoor activities. You know, there's really not a lot of remote places in the U.S. anymore. I just think we would have found something.
I don't know. I tend to go with that as well. But having now driven across the country twice, I think that the country is really wide open. I mean, compared to where I am. Where I am, it's hard to get lost anywhere. There's a basic saying in the Northeast, if you're lost in the woods, walk 20 miles in a straight line and you'll hit a road. Because it's just that developed. You can't. But out west, with my experience, with as little of experience as I had, I go, you guys have country that goes forever. And can something get lost in there? I guess it could. I mean, I don't have any good argument to say why it will or it won't, but like I said, I tend to be like an optimistic skeptic about it. I don't know the answers to it. I don't know why something like that can be as elusive as it is. And, you know, why haven't we ever found any kind of bones or anything like that? You know, but listen, if these things tend to keep into the deep woods, you got that's a lot of bushwhacking you got to do then. That's a lot of deep walking in. I don't think they're going to just drop dead off the side of the trail.
That's true. I've spent, you know, one of my big things when I was in my 20s was camping in the middle of nowhere. I mean, like, literally the middle of nowhere. And after all those years, I can honestly say not once did I ever experience anything strange. Unfortunately, I wish I had. I had quite a few UFO things, but those weren't all in California. I never saw a UFO in Oregon. Well, no, that's not entirely true. I saw more stuff in California than I did Oregon. But, yeah, I never saw a Bigfoot or saw any creepy cryptozoological creature or anything.
Well, did you in all those years camping, did you ever see a bear?
I never – see, and that came up before, too, in subsequent interviews, is somebody asked me the same thing, have you ever seen a bear, and I haven't.
Or a mountain lion or anything like that?
I have. I live among them. I live in bear country. Literally, I have bears.
But I'm just saying. If you're out in the middle of if you're camping out in the middle of nowhere, I mean, there's no Bigfoot, but then there's no bear, and we know we have them. But
it's true.
But
and
you didn't experience it or anything.
That's a good argument. And I know bears exist. I don't need to go out and see one.
We've seen them.
Yeah, we know they exist.
Yeah,
they
but hey, we only got
So how do we know if Bigfoot exists? They probably do, but they could be pretty elusive.
Well, I mean, but and there's all those theories about, you know, are they a half spiritual being? You know, and then you get the UFO tie-in with Bigfoot. Because, you know, maybe you've heard this. I've heard the thing with Bigfoot is where Bigfoot sightings sometimes coincide with UFO sightings. Now, I don't know, but I've heard that theory thrown out there. I don't have any answer for it. It seems to be a very elusive creature. I know that we have... there's a Bigfoot group here in New Jersey. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to think that Bigfoot was in New Jersey. But in upstate New York, in the Whitehall area, there's a number of Bigfoot stories that take place up there. And that's the Lake George region, or Fort Ticonderoga, and all of that area. And it's right on the eastern part of the state, north of Albany, close to the Vermont border. I've actually done some hiking there, and I'll tell you, the only story that I have that it could be a Bigfoot. I have no idea. I was hiking up what's called Black Mountain, and Black Mountain is the highest point that overlooks the Lake George region. And I was hiking up there to do a sunrise shoot. So I get onto this trail at like 4:30 in the morning. I just have my headlamp and my hiking stick and my backpack, and I go. And I'm going in, and I'm probably about a mile and a half in the woods. And I hear this incredible screech, but it's way off in the distance, way off.
Mm.
And it's not an owl. It's not anything I've ever heard. I've heard certain owls. I certainly haven't heard every bird going, but it didn't sound like a bear. It certainly wasn't a coyote or anything like that. But what was really strange was that a very similar call answered from a different direction, a little further away. And I'm standing there in the woods going, holy crap, that's weird. And then it happened again, and the call answered again. And it was like it was moving through the woods, but it was moving away from me. And it was already a safe distance off. It wasn't like it was like right on top of me, and I was like, holy crap. But it was already moving away. I actually got off the trail, and I kneeled down and got low as I listened to this take place. You know, I would say take place like 5-10 minutes. In reality, it was probably one or two. But it just these two calls answering each other, this kind of a screech, the screech howl thing, and it just faded away. It just, you know, over time, and then I went up and hiked the rest of the mountain and did the sunrise shoot and whatnot. And one of the things, when I always kept that experience with me, and so when I went on the Bigfoot expedition, I was wondering if there would be any confirmation of it. Some guy who was an audio guy on the Bigfoot expedition had all of these recordings, and one of the recordings that he had, it kind of rung a bell. Now, you know, I don't know. Did I want confirmation of it to validate my experience? I don't know. But one of those calls, it just sort of rang true. If you can know what I mean, it seemed like that's about the closest thing that I could say it was. Did I have a Bigfoot experience? I have no idea. I had an experience. It was a little weird. It was a little frightening. You know, you're in the middle of the woods, a couple miles off the road, and got a headlamp and a big hiking stick, and that's about it. You know, but that was my whole experience with what. But see, that area was known for Bigfoot. So then, you know, you start putting it into your head and going, oh, my God, could that be it? You know what I mean?
So we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to give you an opportunity real quick to throw out where people can find your book. And then we do have a caller. So once you do that, I'll bring the caller on just for a minute or so and let them give their input.
They could find The Jersey Devil and Just Beyond the Shadows are both on Amazon. They're e-books, $2.99, or they could buy a soft cover if they like, if you want to be more traditional. Like I said, you find it on Amazon. And that'd be, you know, I hope people would be interested in wanting to buy them. I think they'll find them very entertaining. I write them for entertainment. They're fiction, tend to be horror adventure fiction, so no nonfiction stuff. Some of the Jersey Devil stuff I took as the best I could. and with the folklore. So some of that stuff is in there as well.
Outstanding. All right, we'll get to this caller real quick, and then we'll close her up.
Thank you.
Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons.
Oh. Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
Oh, great.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Palmer, Alaska.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
So,
do you have a question for...
I was born in Millville, New Jersey,
okay.
from Cumberland County. And
yeah.
Cumberland County, and as a young kid, my older brother, Joey Francois, lived right there at the all over. We used to run through the Pine Barrens all the time. I mean, even up to teenagers, we'd go out to the Blue Holes and whatnot. And, of course, you know, very, very well. We always, Boy Scouts and all that, it was always about the Jersey Devil and, you know, weird South Jersey. There's, you know, there's a big difference between North Jersey, South Jersey. I'm a South Jersey boy, born in South Jersey.
Yeah.
So I know all very well, but even as a child, you know, you hear all these stories, the stories are there, and even in the Boy Scouts, and you get yourself worked up. But there was only one incident where we were all out, and we would camp out all the time. You know, we ran all through the Silica. South Jersey is known for Owens, Illinois, and Kerr Glass, and Wheaton's, and Wheaton Glass, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But being out there, we've had so many different weird encounters with things that will never be explained or anyone would ever understand. And I just want to let you know that you say that the Northeast is short and small, but actually, if you were ever out in the Pine Barrens of South Jersey, it's forever. I mean, it's
well, yeah, I
South
was
say,
I was saying that it can seem like it can go on for a long, long time. There are stretches of that area that are just very, you know, they feel like they can go forever.
Yeah, well, Vineland is the largest city in New Jersey, and it's only the largest city in size because of all the vegetable fields and all the the garden.
Yeah.
You know, Jersey is the garden state, but it's the Jersey part of it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Very interesting. I really appreciate you coming on to Paranormal Horizons. I really got excited when I was listening to you guys because it brings back a lot of good childhood memories that I'll never forget. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for chipping
in. How you doing? Hey, Sherry. How you doing, Sherry?
Pretty good. Is this Tim?
Good. Right. Yeah, it's Tim.
Yep. Hi, how's it going?
Yeah. My father, he still lives down in Wildwood Villas. My mom still lives in Millville.
Nice.
With my brother. Yep. And it was awesome listening to you. And I'm glad I got to call in tonight. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it very much. I know time is short, so.
That's good to hear from you. Check in on
thank
us. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
Yep, for sure, for sure. You folks have a wonderful evening. And are you in Jersey now?
Yes, I am. I'm actually
what
up
part
in
of
North
Jersey.
Jersey up by Rutgers, up on in the New Brunswick area.
Sure, New Brunswick, Rutgers. Yeah, right on. Cool. Right on. I remember when the double nickel used to stop right there in Malaga. So right at the Liberty Bell, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I went to Glassboro State College. Well, it's now Rowan
Excellent.
University, but I went to Glassboro State College. It's down
right
South
on,
Jersey.
Man. Yeah. used to camp out the Cherry Hill Mall for tickets to go to the concert there at the Spectrum. Yeah. Hey, it was excellent catching up. It was excellent talking to you. I know you folks got to get out of here. You have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for being on Paranormal Horizons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for,
yeah. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate your support. Hang in there, Tim.
All right. We are
Hey, thank you for having me.
Out of time.
Had a
blast. JJ, thanks for coming on. Yeah, and I learned a little bit more about the Jersey Devil. Like I said, I don't think that there's ever been a subject on this show before, and thank you for taking the time to come on. And hopefully we can get you back on in the future. Maybe we can talk about some other – maybe we could hit the Bigfoot a little more. That's always a fun subject.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to do it. I had a blast. The hour went by, and it was fantastic. I thank you guys for having me.
Well, I thank you for spending time. That's 3-hour, 4-hour difference. And, you know, I appreciate you spending the time to stay up and being on our show. We appreciate
not
you.
A I got to get up in 5 hours. So.
Oh, no.
it's all good. It was
that.
Worth it. I loved
Please.
It. I had
thank
a great
you so
time.
Much
I had
and
a great
we'll
time.
Be in touch.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Take care,
JJ. All right. Thanks,
bye-bye.
JJ.
All righty.
Yay.
Bye-bye.
Next week, quickly, we're going to have Barry Gott, and we're going to go in Barry is a very familiar face and voice with our show. Very talented, been in the business for 45, 47 years in the paranormal and metaphysical area. So we're going to probably going to just see what he wants to talk about. We'll bring him on, and it's going to be good to have him back.
Sounds good. All right. Well, unless you have anything else, I guess we'll close it off. Hope everybody has a great and safe week, and we'll see everybody again on next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. And want to thank our listeners on Blog Talk Radio and KITC-FM and KNCP-FM who will listen to the show Thursday night. And with that, hope everybody stays safe, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Hey,
good night, everyone.
Take care. Thanks, everybody. Peace.